This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. We had a panel discussion today focusing in on the income tax issue in the state of Illinois and how this will affect taxpayers and the coming budgets. Our panelists included two state senators and two members of the House of Representatives. The state senators included Senator L.G. Sims Jr., who represents the 17th Senate District. That includes portions of the south side of Chicago, the near south suburbs, Will and Kankakee counties. Before becoming a state senator, L.G. Sims served 6 years as a state representative of the 34th House District. Our other panelists included Senator Chuck Weaver, state senator from central Illinois. His district includes 10 central Illinois counties that are north, east, and west of the city of Peoria. The two members who represented the House of Representatives, Representative David McSweeney, the 52nd District from the northwestern suburbs of Chicago, and Representative Will Gazzardi, State Rep of the 39th District that serves the northwest side of Chicago, Logan Square, Portage Park, Belmont Cragen, the Hermosa and Avondale neighborhoods of Chicago. All the panelists focused in on Governor Pritzker's plan to keep Illinois moving forward. Now, even if a progressive income tax amendment is put before the voters, it will not go into effect until November of 2020. So one of the questions that the panelists debate is, what do we do until then? All agreed that Illinois faces a serious math problem and that a progressive income tax is the best solution. Over half of our budget in the state of Illinois cannot be touched. So that means we're dealing with only one half of the budget, $3 billion in discretionary spending that affect the basic operations of government. The question always is, who is going to pay? Representative McSweeney feels that Governor Pritzker's income tax plan is only a cover-up for a massive tax increase in the future. The real plan will be to continue to raise taxes, hit small businesses, S-Corps, LLCs, and pass-through agencies. The other panelists agreed that we need the progressive income tax, but they're not sure how much it would raise. And the Constitution of Illinois, the amendment proposed, would allow for a tax increase, but not say how much. Then the panelists focus in on the pension problems. Unless we can address our pension problems, we will not be able to solve the fiscal mess that Illinois is in. Senator Weaver proposed that we consider three things: the constitutional amendment, the movement from a flat to a graduated tax, a middle-class income tax, and a service tax. Obviously, there is a lot to be done in Springfield in the coming months before the legislature agrees on a program and plan that the voters will then address in November of 2020.
Representative Gazzardi, do you want to start us off?
Sure, it'd be my pleasure. Well, thank you all so much for having me here today. I'm very excited to be here to discuss this issue with you, and it's an issue that I care very deeply about. I think the importance of the fair tax is paramount to our state's fiscal future. Frankly, it's a math problem that our state is facing, and there is no better solution than the one that's before us. How do I know there's no better solution? Well, Governor Rauner had 4 years to try. We had 4 years of a governor who came into office and said, Illinois is riddled with waste, fraud, and abuse, and corruption, and everything else, and we can solve this budget problem by tackling those challenges. And every year he introduced a budget, and every year those budgets were billions of dollars out of balance. In fact, Governor Rauner, during those budgets, proposed very deep cuts to social programs that I think are deeply important. You know, the services for people with autism or breast cancer screenings or drugs for people with AIDS who can't afford their medications, right? He cut these programs over and over and over and still was billions of dollars shy of bringing our budget into balance. The truth of the matter is this. Our state has a $40 billion general revenue budget, plus or minus. About half of that is what we call above-the-line costs, meaning costs that we can't touch, things that we just have to pay. So of our discretionary money, of our $20 billion in discretionary money, we have about a $3 billion deficit. So that's about a 15% deficit of our discretionary spending. And when I say discretionary, I'm talking about things like K-12 education, higher education, public safety, human services, the basic operations of government. We have a 15% deficit. And I don't believe there's anyone on this panel or in state government who believes that our government institutions can tolerate a 15% cut. Like, we can't take 15% out of K-12 education. It would be devastating to the children in our state. So given that there's no realistic solution based on cuts, the governor had 4 years to come up with one and couldn't, and I don't believe that anyone would sit here and propose one, we have to figure out a way to pay for the services that we're providing. And I'm not even talking about doing more than what we're doing today. For instance, dedicating state funds to lower people's property taxes, which I believe would be deeply important, or fully funding our public schools. Just what we're doing today, we don't have enough money to pay for it. So the only question is, who's going to pay? And I believe the fairest answer to that question is the proposal we have before us.
Thank you, Representative Guzzardi. Representative McSweeney.
Thank you very much for having us today. This is a very important discussion. We all have a very good personal relationship, and that doesn't happen too much in Springfield. There's a lot of calling names, and what we need to do is focus on the real issues that count. My concern with the graduated tax is that it's really a code phrase for a massive tax. It's a tax increase in the future. It's not a fair tax. It's a tax eventually on the middle class, because we all know that it will fund additional revenue. We've tried the tax route in Illinois over and over again. The tax rates were raised by 67% in 2011, and what happened? The money was spent mainly on pensions. There was another 32% increase in the income tax rate after there was a slight rollback after the tax actually expired in 2015. So we have tried tax increases, and we know that the real plan here is to continue to raise taxes. The governor has said that $3.4 billion is his target. He's promised over $10 billion of new spending. And this tax actually would hit small businesses, pass-through entities, the limited liability companies, partnerships, subchapter S corporations. 90% of the corporations or businesses in Illinois, the corporations and partnerships combined, are pass-through entities that pay at the individual rate. They are creating 72% of the jobs. If you look at the income for filers of over $500,000, they are actually producing 72% of the taxable income for pass-through entities. So this is a tax on small businesses. This is a tax eventually in the middle class, because we all know that these tax rates are going to change in the future. Remember, the constitutional amendment just allows a graduated tax. It doesn't set the rates. So we're leading to much higher tax in the future. And I hope we talk a lot today about spending. As much as I respect Chairman Guzzardi, I totally disagree on the spending side. We need spending reform. We need a constitutional amendment on pensions. Why aren't we doing what Arizona did, which is addressing through a negotiated settlement with the unions and eventually a constitutional amendment to 3% compounded growth in benefits every year? Inflation is only 1.8%. I reject that's untouchable. I reject that Medicaid is untouchable. 25% of the people in the state of Illinois are on Medicaid. We should right now say anybody below 175% of the poverty level, no cuts at all. But we need to tighten up eligibility. We need to use our U.S. senators to get more federal funding. We're only receiving 50 cents on the dollars. And one of my best friends in Springfield, Greg Harris, the majority leader, who I disagree with on a lot of issues, he has great ideas on bringing more federal funding to the state of Illinois. And why don't we do a private sector audit of all spending in the state of Illinois? We see what's going on, the scandals at DCFS, the scandals at a lot of different departments, so we can free up money in this state. So we need to cut spending. It's a $38.3 billion budget. $8.1 is being spent on pensions, $8.2 on Medicaid out of the general fund, $9 billion on education with absolutely no reform. There's $350 million increase every year with no reforms, no property tax reduction. So my belief is that we need to focus on cutting spending and specifically doing a constitutional amendment for pensions, and we also need to reform Medicaid. We need to also bring in an audit of all the spending in the state of Illinois, and we need to focus on the spending side, not raising taxes.
Thank you very much, Representative. And now, Senator Sims.
Thank you so much, and thank you all for having us. This is an important discussion, and as you can hear, and I'm sure you'll hear throughout this discussion today, there are some very different opinions about where we go. There are some very different opinions about where we are. Let me start at a couple. First and foremost, can we all acknowledge we have problems? The state is clearly on the path that needs to be reformed. So we've got to put in a place plans that will fix that, or puts us on a path towards fiscal stability. It's been over 60 days since the governor introduced his budget, but we have not heard a plan from my colleagues and my friends, and we have great relationships, but we've not heard a plan that outlines what they would propose. You've not heard a plan that would say, here is how we do it. Representative Sweeney, who I have a great deal of respect for, just talked about pensions. Well, we've had some conversations with the Illinois Supreme Court. They've already acknowledged that pensions are a promise. So we've got to address the issues that are before us. Right now, we have a $3.2 billion structural deficit in our budget that was built into the inaction that happened over the last 4 years by our governor, who was hell-bent on hollowing out state government. So what you have before us is a plan, what the governor has clearly said, is a bridge to the future. You have a plan that lays out three basic options. One, we have a revenue plan that would institute a graduated income tax raising about $3.4 billion. Or, two, you could have 15% across-the-board cuts or state spending. That, again, impacts thousands of women who would be ineligible to receive breast cancer screenings or treatment, thousands of seniors who will no longer receive Meals on Wheels services, early intervention services will be cut back, mental health services will be further decimated, the social services safety network, which so many of our communities depend on, would be decimated. That's number two. Number three would be a tax on everyone. So those are the options. They're not great. They're not all great options, but we've got to be honest with ourselves. We don't necessarily only have a spending problem. There have been millions of dollars cut out of our state budget. We have gotten to the point where not only are we're not just cutting fat anymore, we're hitting muscle and bone. So we have to figure out how we're going to reform our state's revenue code. We have a 20th century revenue code for a 21st century economy. We have to address that. And when you look across the country, over 30 states have a graduated income tax. Of the states with the top 10 economies across our state, half of them have graduated income taxes. If it's an idea that could not work, then other states would not already be looking at it. So I'm here, and I'm hoping we'll have a discussion about how we fix problems. That's what the people of the 17th District sent me to Springfield to do, which was fix their problems. And I'm hoping that today you can hear from us what our desires are and what our plans are. But hopefully you have some great questions from us as well. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Senator Sims. And now, Senator Chuck Weaver.
Great. Thank you. And, Doctor, thank you for being our moderator today. But I want to thank just what you do as the Board of Governors and the members to get people in a room like this. And you folks, I'm so proud to know that you're up here trying to get insight into this important issue. And, gentlemen, I read your bios over the weekend. We're going to give them some insight. You're smart guys, so that's great. Here's what I want you thinking about. Today, if somebody happens to say, hey, what was City Club about? I want you to go home and tell them this issue, okay? Because there's a lot of confusion over what we're really talking about. People do not understand the different votes that will happen. So I'm going to put them into three buckets for you, the different votes that will happen. You hear of two of those. There's a third one I think is very important, okay? The first one's a constitutional amendment. All that does is take us from a flat tax to a graduated tax. It was established in 1970 with one very simple design. Flat taxes are harder to raise. Illinois needs discipline of a flat tax. That's a constitutional amendment. The next thing you hear a lot about, the fair tax, it's not in the constitutional amendment. I'm going to call it the introductory offer. Okay? It's to tie us to that amendment so people are willing to take a bite on it. Okay? Let's kind of think about like a cable introductory offer. I don't think it can stick. There is no way that we can keep with this tax that 97% of the people are going to tax 3% of the people. It will not happen. I'll talk later about how those percentages might work or real quickly will come into the middle-income families. And one thing we all have in agreement is middle-income families drive our economy. They're so important with regard to where our job creators have to be here to give them jobs and to drive it. And I'm very concerned about where this fair tax goes. The final bucket is what I'm going to call the middle-income tax. Every time you hear the word fair tax, graduated tax, think about the middle income tax, because very quickly you will see this drop down to a number I believe is probably going to be close to $75,000 where that tax rate starts, not millionaires. I hope we get a chance to talk about that some today. Thanks again for having me.
Okay, thank you, Senator Weaver. Okay, so we're ready to address some of the questions that have been submitted. This is from Peter Scozzi, who's with the BNSF Railway. Peter's right over here on the far right. Even if the tax yields what Governor Pritzker says, $3.4 billion, what kind of a financial hole will Illinois be in after it's passed? So who would like to respond to that question? Senator Sims looks like he's grabbing the mic.
Again, I think that we've got to figure out how we are modernizing our tax code. And we keep careening from crisis to crisis, figuring out today's issue versus tomorrow's issue. When we build stability into the process, you'll see that the state will start to turn around. We've instituted fiscal discipline on a number of fronts by cutting billions of dollars in spending. But it's also we've got to make sure we have a revenue code that matches the economy we have, and we don't currently have that. Until we address the problems that are before us, we keep saying what I've heard a couple of times here today already. What will happen in the future? What we have before us is the proposal. What we are debating today is a proposal before us. The proposal before us calls for a graduate income tax where 97% of taxpayers will not be negative. They will not see an increase, but they may actually see a decrease in their tax liability.
If I might jump in there too.
Okay.
I'm sorry, David. I know how to point. Go ahead.
Don't do that well.
Yeah, I just want to say to the question of what's going to happen in the future in the out years with the fair tax. I think one of the important things to remember is that income growth in this state and around the country has gone disproportionately to the very highest income brackets, right, in the past decades. We've seen that basically for middle-income folks, wages have stayed stagnant, and for the folks at the very high end of the wage spectrum, wages have increased. So one of the real benefits of the fair tax system is that it will capture growth sustainably in the long term. Because we're capturing a higher percentage of the income that's at the very top tiers, it's going to help us actually build a more stable long-term tax structure, because we're finally focusing our taxes on the places where the wage growth really has occurred. So I think the structural deficit will be wiped out by implementing this fair tax, and our longer-term challenges will be mitigated by the fact that we're finally focusing our tax structure on those brackets where the income growth has really been higher than elsewhere.
Thank you. Well, David, I know you want to respond to that.
So we still have $8.6 billion of unpaid bills, and we have major problems because we have autopilot spending in the state, especially on Medicaid and pensions. And as much as I respect this gentleman, it's a false choice. There's not a 15% cut, because you have to address the issue of pensions. Why are we not addressing the issue that is facing the state of Illinois in the biggest way? We have a $130 billion liability, according to the state accounting. That assumes a 7% rate of return. If you use what Moody's, the rating agency, uses, it's a $250 billion problem. And we can. Arizona has the same constitution. We have to have a negotiated settlement, and that only will happen. And that's why I thought this governor had a chance, just like Nixon going to China, to deal with the unions, to actually negotiate work rules and changes with the group health insurance and pensions in a positive way. That's where the money is. And also in Medicaid, getting more federal dollars and completing a private sector audit. So I don't believe this does anything. Connecticut adopted a graduated tax system, and they keep raising taxes over and over again. This is all about a tax increase.
Okay. Senator Sims or Senator Weaver, do you want to chime in on this?
Yeah, I'd like to just say I've heard twice today we don't think about what's going to happen in the future. We're leaders. Leaders are supposed to be thinking entirely about what's going to happen in the future. And if we think that when we already know today that $10.7 billion is needed to fill the hole, and we're talking about a tax structure that's going to deal with $3.4 billion, and to say that this is only going to affect the top 3%, we have to get honest about this. Keep thinking about this. The amendment's one thing. The fair tax is another. But everything we're talking about, you got to understand that if we're going to go to this graduated tax, we will be coming after the middle-income families aggressively, and we cannot afford to do that. You know, Representative Guzzardi, you made a very interesting point about this is a group of people that we can get our revenue from. Those folks leave.
That's just not true. Sorry. I hate to interrupt you.
I can't wait for that discussion. You want to come, and then I'd love to respond whenever it's my time. Thank you.
Go ahead. All right, Senator. Go ahead.
No, please.
I just think that I'm really glad you brought this up, because this is one of the biggest boogeymen in this whole entire debate, is that when we raise taxes on wealthy folks, they leave. It's just really important to know the facts about this. So Minnesota, which is, you know, we talk a lot about Minnesota because they're doing really well. They raised taxes on the wealthy. They're doing great now. What happened to the wealthy folks in Minnesota when we raised when they raised taxes on the highest earners? Well, it turns out that between 2013 and 2016, the number of filers in Minnesota making more than $200,000 a year, in that high tax bracket, the number of filers increased 28%. So wealthy people came to Minnesota. There wasn't some mass exodus. The people in Illinois who are making over $100,000 a year, some of them are leaving the state. It's true. Where are they going? Their top destinations are New York City, Los Angeles, and the Twin Cities in Minnesota. The top tax rate in New York City is 12.7%. The top tax rate in LA is 13.3%. People don't make decisions about where they're going to live based on the top marginal tax rate. If so, we would see every retired person in America moving to Illinois, because our retirement tax rate is zero. But we somehow don't see this massive influx of retirees here in Illinois. It's just not a valid argument, and the facts of the case don't bear it out.
Well, you certainly have some supporters out there on that.
Three people thought that was a really good point.
A response from Senator Weaver, and then we'll move along.
You know, I saw an article this week that said that during 2011 to 2016, the filers in Illinois went up that were above 200,000. Do you realize what happened from 2011 to 2016? I mean, we can do anything we want with figures, but the reality is 2011 to 2016, we were coming out of the worst recession since 2009. I see people shake. You guys aren't clapping for me, but you are shaking your head. Yes, okay. Now, our stock market went from 11.5 to 18.5. Now, the stock market is not where everybody made that 200,000, but small businesses were in the middle of recovery. Minnesota was going through the same period at that time. So we got to be careful where our numbers are coming from. We also have to think about the fact that, and I'm going to take another minute. Do you mind on this? Because I think it's very important for people to understand. I've heard this argument, people will not leave over income tax. And maybe job creators won't leave over income tax. And maybe they won't leave because our workers' comp is one of the worst in the country. Okay? And maybe they won't leave because of other dilemmas we have. And I'm sorry, I need to look at my note on this one real quickly. $15 minimum wage downstate. That will chase people out of this state. You add to that other things like the out-migration we already have, where in our community there's out-migration, so home values drop. No new homes are built. More jobs are lost. Any one of those may not push people out of state, but I sincerely believe right now Illinois, especially downstate Illinois, if you're not feeling that pain up here, Representative Guzzardi, we are at a tipping point where people with wealth are prepared to leave our state, and they've been doing it. In fact, of the leavers versus the comers, folks leaving the state have a 35% higher income than the folks coming to our state. To make that variation happen, there's a lot of wealthy people driving that number up.
We're going to have to disagree.
Let me chime in on this point, because what we are seeing is you're not seeing the wealthy taxpayers leave. What you have seen is when the last time we raised income taxes, you saw low income taxpayers leave the state. So those are the exact same people that my colleagues are saying they're trying to protect, those middle income people. And what's ironic for me is the entire debate about the job creators. When we had this same debate when we were fighting to raise the minimum wage, these same folks were saying that they're going to be leaving. Well, under the fair tax plan, these same job creators wouldn't even be paying higher taxes if their income is less than $250,000. So we've got to pick the arguments that makes you can't pick and choose arguments. Pick and choose the arguments that are based in fact, that are based on, and that the numbers bear out. The numbers bear out that we have under this plan, less than 3% of taxpayers will be affected, period. What we have is you have seen the highest income brackets continue to grow. We have the largest wealth disparity at any time in our nation's history at this moment. The folks who are at the upper echelon and the upper tier of our income scale, they're doing very, very well. So it's time for us to make sure it just fundamentally is unfair for somebody who makes $3,000 to pay the same rate of tax for somebody who makes $3 million. It just is something fundamentally unfair about that, which is why you have a system that matches where our taxpayers are.
Okay, thank you. Representative McSweeney, this is sort of directed to you. It's from Maria Peterson. She's with the League of Women Voters in Lake County. All the reforms and investigations Representative McSweeney said need to occur. Why was this not pushed when the governor was named Rauner?
Well, I'm the wrong person to defend Bruce Rauner. I was his most vocal critic on the Republican side because he didn't do any of that. You're exactly right. He talked, and he created a budget crisis. He didn't use his line item veto. He didn't use the veto. So I'm never going to defend Bruce Rauner, and we all know he lost by 16 points. What we need to do, and let me be specific about the reforms, is we need a pension constitutional amendment. Negotiated amendment that is codified into law with the unions. That is where the money is. We need more federal dollars for Medicaid. We need to apply for Medicaid waivers. We need to use some of the ideas of Greg Harris, a Democrat, the majority leader in the House, to bring more federal money into the state of Illinois. And we need to do an audit. In fact, actually under Rauner, I called for a number of audits of spending and scandals that occurred in spending in his administration. But we need to do that for all spending. Why not hire a private sector auditing firm to do a complete audit of all spending? But the real money is with Medicaid. The real money is with pensions. And again, you maintain all existing benefits on pensions. It's really adjust the 3% compounded growth in the future. Medicaid, don't touch anybody below 175% of the poverty level. And on the spending side, we have a program in place right now that's $350 million of annual increase in spending that's cumulative that goes over and over again. So we need to address spending in this state. And I'm not the person to defend Bruce Rauner since I was his biggest critic.
Okay, thank you. Will, you want to chime in on this?
Briefly, because the pension thing has come up a couple of times. That's, you know, Senator Sims said earlier, what is the solution that our Republican colleagues are proposing? And the only one that I think has any sort of fiscal sense to it is the one that Representative McSweeney said, which is instead of amending the Constitution to do a fair tax, amend the Constitution and take away pension benefits, right? The numbers may add up that way. But I think we get very quickly to what strikes me as a moral question, right? Pensions are commitments that we entered into with people who decided to spend their careers in public service. We said, we're going to pay you less than you might make in the private sector, and in exchange for that, we're going to provide you with a decent benefit when you retire. So I think that if you weigh those two options against each other, we're saying, who do we want to pay for our state's budget? Do we want it to be the very wealthiest people in Illinois, or do we want it to be retirees who were school teachers and worked in our public sector? That, to me, seems like there's a very obvious question, just from a sense of fairness, right? Do we want to put our state's budget woes on the backs of public sector retirees or on the very, very wealthiest people in our state? Seems to me like there's a very plain answer to that question.
Okay, we have a couple of questions that refer to pensions. And I guess, Jim Terman, James, where are you? Over there. Jim Terman, his question is, how does Governor Pritzker intend to fix the pension crisis, if not by constitutional amendment? You've talked about a number of constitutional, or the amendment to change the flat tax to progressive tax, but we haven't heard much coming out of the executive office in Springfield about the pension crisis and a constitutional amendment in that area. Is there anything that you can...
I'll address it quickly. You heard the budget presentation a month or so ago. There were five pension solutions in that budget, by the way, none of which dealt with what happens inside the system, none of which dealt with what we do with pensions long term. And it's this problem we have of continuing to think we can just go back to the well to solve the problems or readjust how our payment structures work. You know, this reform issue was brought up a little bit ago. It has not been addressed. Governor Rauner basically put his political career on it, failed, because Springfield refuses to deal with reform. This guy did everything he could to cause reform. I get it, but there is no discipline, self-discipline in Springfield to make the tough decisions. And here's what happens when you don't have self-discipline. If you're not disciplining yourself, the outside's going to discipline you. And now we're at that point where the rest of the country is looking at us. In fact, I hope I get to talk about Warren Buffett's comment about states like Illinois in a minute. But they are going to discipline us if we don't do it ourselves. We must have reform. With regard to pension, there's a number of ideas that are out there. But until we start understanding that we have to deal with the fact that you mentioned private sector is pays more than private than a public sector, our public sector employees in the state, wages have gone up 43% in 10 years, while private sector wages have gone up 11%. We have to be realistic about that. And by the way, those are great people. But we have to be realistic about what has happened with wage arbitrage across our country and with regard to how we compete elsewhere, and understand we've got to bring our costs down inside the government as well with regard to salaries.
We have a question here from Algie, I'm sorry.
For a second. Can we acknowledge that even though state employee salaries have increased, they're still less than their private sector counterparts, and we still have we have a teacher minimum salary bill that we tried to work out, is trying to work its way through the legislature. Well, we are trying to make sure that we have individuals who are prepared, who will commit themselves to public service. It is very, very difficult to have individuals commit themselves to public service because it's not profitable. But the reason that they did that was because they understand they're committed to public service. These are tremendously committed individuals, committed to public service, committed to making sure that we're providing services. But we're not investing in that. We're not investing in them. We continue to demonize them. Our public sector employees are not the enemy. They're not the problem.
Totally agree.
They are part of the solution. They are on the front lines providing those services that we so richly, that we are protecting and fighting for every day. So that's it. Whenever I hear the discussion about public sector employee salaries, it's difficult for me to hear because I know the work that they're doing. I know the commitment that they have. Mm-hmm. But also let me talk about pensions for a moment. Do we have a pension commitment? And we do have that's upwards of $100 billion. Yes, but it's a fallacy that we have a problem only because we are not going to have all state employees go into the pension system all at once. So yes, do we have an obligation that we have to account for? Absolutely. But are we going to have all of those employees retire at the same time? Where we're going to pay that out? No. But do we have a pension system and an obligation that? And a commitment that we've made to these employees that we've got to honor. Yes.
Okay, thank you. This is a question from Bob Wislow. Bob, where are you? Oh, right over there. Thank you. He wants to know if people are in Springfield, you legislators, the leaders, and so on, are talking about a compromise position of $1.1 billion each from the flat tax, a graduated tax, and spending cuts. Is there any discussion yet at this stage? And tied in with that would be, is this going to be something that happens on the very last day or night before the legislature adjourns?
Let me answer and say that I've offered a number of times to meet with Governor Pritzker to discuss the spending side. I'm sure what his schedule allows will make that happen, because we need to discuss these issues on pensions, on Medicaid. We have to start with the spending discussion. All the discussion in Springfield now, including on the governor's budget, is on taxes. There's a plastic bag tax. There's an insurance tax. And there are other taxes that are included in that budget. We need to focus on having a realistic discussion on the budget and the spending problem. And I say to Chairman Sims, is again a person I really do respect and have worked with closely, I have no issue with the state employees. What I have an issue with is pensions that are increasing at 3% compounded a year when inflation is only 1.8%. So we're increasing our liability every year. We need a constitutional amendment. We need to address the spending side. That's where I think we need to have a discussion. It can't just be about taxes. We raised taxes in 2011. We raised taxes in 2017. We're going to raise taxes again in this budget, which I'm going to oppose if it includes tax increases. And when I came to the General Assembly in 2013, spending was $33.1 billion. It's $38 billion. Now, and a lot of that is driven by pensions. We keep coming back to this issue that we have to have a serious discussion about pensions. And we also have a serious discussion as part of this about the level of pensions. Looking at people retiring with pensions that exceed over $125,000 in some cases. And we know superintendents, obviously, who have much higher levels. So with that, we need to have a discussion about spending in the state. I'm willing to have the discussion anytime. And these two gentlemen, as you know, are very intelligent people and leaders in the state, and they're always willing to talk. But I want to see the governor talk about this issue of cutting spending.
Okay. Question here. If the progressive income tax passes, none of the revenue would come in at the earliest before November of 2020, correct? Mm-hmm. So this is a question from Laura Davis with the Cook County League of Women Voters. You know, these League of Women Voters keep us on our toes. Thank you very much. If Illinois does not move to a graduated income tax, what are your ideas to generate revenue in order to pay the state's current bills? So who would like to tackle that one for a starter?
I'll give you just one real quick fact.
Okay, Chuck.
Thank you very much. Of what happened in this last budget. There was one cut in this last budget, $6 million cut, $38 billion budget. I tried to explain this to somebody today. They said, too many zeros, can't get their brain around it. I'm going to make it a very simple number for you. That one cut was 0.15%. One cut. Three zeros followed by a 1.5 on the left, on the right side of the decimal. That's not how we're going to fix it. We've got to be realistic that there are places we can cut 15%. Nobody wants to see that. We all agree with that. But there's got to be a place in the middle where we can look at cuts realistically. We can figure out how to restructure pensions appropriately. And I believe we've got a special opportunity right now. Very difficult for a Republican governor to come in, introduce reform in a very political environment. Right now we have a Democratic governor. He's a smart guy. We have Democrats, a supermajority in both houses. I believe he can come forward with a lot of the reforms that have been pushed for a lot of years, and I believe people will follow him because one thing that has happened over the last 4 years is everyone in our state understands the dilemma of our state. We understand there are problems, and I believe the political will can be there for support for this governor to come in and make big changes that can reform. And then there could be support from folks on this tax side of it. But first, they've got to know that we're actually dealing with problems, or there's no way we can get our state fixed.
And I think the way to do that is to have that discussion, to make sure that everybody's included. It's not enough to say what the problems are, identify the problems. In order to solve them, bring ideas to the table. And bring what compromises you're willing to make to the table. And it's, again, over 61 days since the governor introduced his budget. Where's the plan? I have great respect for these two gentlemen. I worked with both of them on a number of issues. Where's the plan? Let's propose a budget. And Chuck, I disagree with you. There were cuts in that last year's budget. There were millions of dollars in cuts in operational services and the like. Where we were trying to make sure that the budget was built on a balance between revenues and cuts. So we've done that. But if we're going to have these discussions, we've been spending hours. I serve on in the Senate. I serve on both appropriations committees. I'm on Senate Appropriations 1 committee and vice chairman of Senate Appropriations 2, and we spent hours debating this budget. I have yet to see a Republican bill outlining their plan for the budget, what their cuts would be, what the revenues would be. I've yet to see that plan, but I'm willing to have that discussion, and I'm willing to have those discussions at any time. But let's have those open, honest discussions with each other about what the problems are that we're trying to solve, not just identifying. Identifying the problems are easy. Coming with those solutions are much more difficult.
And I'd like to accept your offer to talk about pension reform, Medicaid reform. Maybe we can get the governor involved and have public disclosure. I'd like to have a public meeting with the governor involved, and let's discuss the issues, what our ideas are on pension reform, Medicaid reform, private sector audit of all spending. I take up your challenge, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, so we've got two Democrats here, two Republicans. Can a bill be passed and presented to the governor and the voters of Illinois without Republican support on this income tax issue?
Numerically, yes,
absolutely.
Certainly.
Absolutely.
And I think we have, over the years, certainly in the last 4 years, I got elected 4 years ago, and over those 4 years, I and others spent a lot of time working with our Republican colleagues to talk about this fair tax question. And we haven't yet made headway in making it a bipartisan issue. But again, you know, I think, unfortunately, we haven't heard a lot of answers about what the other way forward is. And we talked about pensions a minute ago, and David talks about pensions and Medicaid. Okay, let's take a second. Do you mind if I take 1 second on Medicaid? In 2011, we passed the SMART Act, which basically privatized Medicaid in the state of Illinois. We introduced managed care into Medicaid. And we were promised big cost savings by doing managed care. And what we found over the years that this has happened is that the costs are basically the same. Services to patients are worse, and the private middlemen who we introduced into the system are just taking profits. Right? They're denying claims to poor people. They're denying care to poor people. Our safety net hospitals are dying on the vine, and it's these middlemen who are making a bunch of money. So as far as Medicaid reform, I mean, I'm open, but boy, we tried the conservative approach on Medicaid, the privatization approach, right? And all we got is bills that keep going up, and worse services for poor people. So I'm not really sure there's a path forward to solving our budget problems without kicking a whole bunch of people off the Medicaid rolls through Medicaid reform. So I think without a clear plan on how Medicaid would get fixed or how the pensions would get fixed, I think that we have to be honest with ourselves that this is the best solution to the math problem our state's facing.
Okay, a quick response to Representative Grizzardi. If not, we're going to move along. We have limited time.
Medicaid reform. We need more federal dollars. We need to tighten up eligibility for anybody above 175% of the poverty level. We need to stopped under Pat Quinn, a private sector audit of the Medicaid system, and I agree with you 100%. I've been one of the biggest opponents of the managed care effort. What we need to do instead of that effort, which actually has created a monopoly in some cases because we've lost suppliers, is we need to also pursue some innovative waivers. That's where it goes back to these bipartisan discussions. Is the best ideas in Springfield these days on Medicaid are from Greg Harris, who's the majority leader as a Democrat, on ways to bring federal money, use programs like they do in Utah, use programs like they do in other states that are innovative, and the administration, whatever you think about this administration, is willing to approve waivers. That's what we need to do on Medicaid.
Okay, here's a question.
Can I just real quickly say I'm not involved in those discussions and would love to be any time, but I do have a great bill right now with Democrat support, Chris Belt, I'm working with him on, that goes directly to municipal pensions and how we can solve some of the pain at the municipal level. There's ways we can get at this, and it is important that we're getting in a room to do it. So thank you.
Okay, this is from Ann Kurter, I believe, with Kurter Consulting. Ann, where are you? Right back there. Is the income tax the only change under consideration? Could it be coupled with a modest addition of sales tax on some services, or maybe a tax on services, and taxing retirement income over $100,000, for example? Anybody want to respond to that?
Well, I'll just say I strongly oppose a retirement tax. I think that's one of the few benefits in the Illinois tax system, and that definitely would drive people out of the state. Again, I think we need to focus on the spending side and specifically on pensions and Medicaid.
Last week we had three gentlemen here talking about the budget in Illinois. Lawrence Massal, the head of the Civic Federation, Ralph Martiri from the Center for Tax Accountability, and I think it was Jason Grotto with ProPublica. And they talked about the estate tax. According to them, Illinois has one of the highest estate taxes in our United States. And they suggested that there are certain people who may be leaving the state of Illinois and establishing residency elsewhere for those 6 months plus 1 day to avoid what they called an onerous estate tax. Any comments about that subject? Charles?
I'd love to deal with that. By the way, this is exciting to be here today, and I've done my preparation the best I can, but I got a group of business guys in the other room just to kind of give them some of my talking points and think this through. And you remember a minute ago when I said, you know, maybe you don't leave for this, maybe you don't leave for that, for some people with wealth. One guy was saying, no, I'm going to be able to stay here, you know, talking about minimum wage and all these things. And then one of his friends said, what about the estate tax? He said, wait a minute, what do you mean? That got his attention. And this gentleman is sold on Peoria but he is seriously after that conversation because of so many dynamics that happen around the estate tax. There's an article in the that someone sent me from a Naples newspaper talking about four problems with our estate tax problem, which tells wealthy people you have got to get out of the state because if it's in trust in the state, it stays in the state for income tax purposes long term. So there's a lot we've got to do to fix that one because, to Representative Ghisardi's point, that's one that will chase people out of our state, and it's people with wealth that we need here to create jobs.
And speaking of chasing someone out of the state, with us is Manny Montagliano. Manny, where are you? He's right over here. He's with TradeHelm, Inc. It's a corporation. And he says, with people leaving, some people, or I think several of you said that high-income people don't leave and so on. I'm here today to help decide whether my family stays in Illinois or not. My decision is 90% based on taxes. If I leave, I am leaving because of taxes. Any comments? Will?
May I? Yeah. I think that the point that's been made here a few times, that the overall bucket of taxation feels high to people, that's a very valid point. And I want to talk about property taxes for a second, because I think when people think about taxes, they often think about, they feel overburdened by property taxes in the state of Illinois. Because we know our income tax rates are actually quite low relative to our neighboring states, right? But property taxes are quite high, especially in particular communities. And I think that the proposal we have before you today is actually the best and, as far as I know, the only long-term solution on the table to lower property taxes. Property taxes are high because the state's share of funding for public education is low. Our schools get 90% of their money from two places, the state and local municipalities through property taxes, right? And when the state share is low, the property tax share is high. And that creates problems for a lot of communities, for communities that want well-funded public schools that raise their property taxes high, and for communities with very low property wealth in the south suburbs, for instance, where they just don't have the resources and their property taxes have to be very high, even though they're not raising very much money because there's very little property wealth in those communities. So it's a deeply broken system. And the only way to realistically lower people's property taxes is to raise the state share of education funding. And that's the proposal that we have before us is going to give us the resources to do that, to finally direct meaningful property tax relief, not a property tax freeze, which is unfortunately not a realistic solution to the property taxes, because it just simply says, it just caps what school districts can be able to spend on education that they need to spend, but a realistic long-term solution to our high property taxes starts here with this fair tax plan. So I think that if you want a state that has a structural, well-funded budget and a tax system that is fair and equitable, you should support this plan. You should stick around to see the fruits of it come to fruition.
Representative McSweeney, you're eager to...
So I appreciate your comments, and I hope you do stay in this state. We have a situation where we have one of the highest total tax burdens. You just can't look at income taxes, which obviously would be raised under this proposal. You have to look at the property taxes, as Representative Ghisardi pointed out, and the sales tax. And we have one of the top four burdens, depending on who does the study, in the country. The answer for property taxes goes back to pension reform. That's where the obligation is, not only at the state level, but at the local level, we need pension reform. And what we're talking about is for new employees, 401ks, which you don't need a constitutional amendment for. We need to reform this Tier 2 system at the state level and also some of the systems at the local level over time. But we're also looking at property tax. I don't support a freeze that doesn't do fundamental things like cut property taxes. So I have a bill that actually would mandate a 10%, even for home rule units of government, cut in property taxes. And that means just like families in the state that are leaving, the local governments, and hopefully combined with pension reform, would need to cut spending. So we need to cut property taxes. That is for sure. I agree with you 100%. We may differ on the means for doing that. But a freeze does not go far enough. We actually need property tax mandated reduction. The only way really to get that long term is consolidation. And a lot of people in this room and BGA and others have led the way in consolidation and also to mandate reductions in property taxes.
Okay, we have time for one last question. Thank you, Representative. This is from Bob Ryder with the CFL. Bob, where are you? Okay, over there. I'll try to summarize your question here. I think this is something that Representative McSweeney alluded to. Isn't suggesting that a future bracket raising taxes on income at $75,000 really a way to politically tie middle-income voters in rural areas with wealthy interests against their own interests? I think that was the gist of his question.
Senator Weaver, I'll just take the chance to say the following. I fundamentally believe that the problem with this is that we're going to have future tax increases in the future. These aren't the real absolutely. Rates. The Constitution allows it, number one, and that will hit the middle income. And my biggest problem also is the fact that this does nothing to address the pension and Medicaid reform. So it's the political side of this is, do you really trust Illinois politicians to set your tax rates in the future? And I think the answer will be no when if this thing gets on the ballot next year.
Okay, time for a 30-second response or a last statement from each of you. LG, do you think the folks can trust Illinois politicians? That was quite a challenge that McSweeney threw down there.
I'm up to the challenge. I'm looking forward to it. As Representative McSweeney knows, I've never been afraid of a challenge, and I've taken on some of the most challenging issues in the General Assembly during my time there. So I'm looking forward to it. You know, we've had plenty of time to see a plan. Haven't seen one, but I'm looking forward to seeing one finally. You know, since we've been predicting the future all day here, let's predict that future. Predict that I'm going to see a great plan. So,
okay, Chuck.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you can definitely trust what's going to happen in Springfield because you heard it today. $3.4 billion is what's going to come out of this plan, but today we heard about property tax relief. This thing is going to bump up to that $10.7 billion of need really quickly. You know there's property tax relief in this recommendation of the fair tax. Do you folks realize that? Has anybody done the math on it? If you have a $150,000 home, it's $70. You can multiply that up, $300,000 home, about $140. So that's not real property tax relief. And if we're going to get property tax relief, it's going to take a lot more than $3.4 billion. There is no way. There's one thing you can trust. This will become a middle-income tax as the graduated tax happens.
Representative Guzzardi?
I'm so thrilled to agree with the senator on that subject, that we need to if we want meaningful property tax relief, we need to raise more revenue at the state. You're absolutely right. I think you've solved the math problem perfectly. Right. I think if there's one thing you all leave this room with, I would encourage it to be the following. Our state has a structural problem, and there is no answer about how to balance that problem without hurting poor people and without hurting seniors and retirees, unless we raise revenue from the folks who can most afford to pay. It is the simple proposal that is before us today, and I think it's the best solution to our state's structural fiscal
problem. Well, let's thank our panelists, Senators Chuck Weaver, L.G. Sims, Representatives David McSweeney, and Will Guzzardi.